I'm Tavis Smiley, and we are pleased to have you hanging out with us today in the final hour of today's program. Two great hours in front of us and one great hour in front of us. Two great hours behind us, I should say. Two behind us and one in front, and I look forward to this hour. And in this hour, two conversations. On the backside of this hour, we'll be joined by the Secretary of the Energy Department, former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. So we'll talk to the Energy Secretary as we discuss the issue of climate justice. In this hour, I look forward again to being joined by yet another cabinet secretary who you will hear on this program on the backside. But we commence this hour as part of our continuing series on climate and the black community in conversation with the chief energy officer for the Sierra Club, Holly Bender, for an update on efforts to shut down coal plants across this country and why that should matter to you. You may recall that some weeks ago we had the president of the Sierra Club, a black man. Ain't that something? A black man is now running the Sierra Club. His name is Ben Jealous. You know Ben Jealous as the youngest person ever to lead the NAACP. So he once led the NAACP and now making history as a black man leading the Sierra Club. Ben Jealous is a friend of this program and always delighted to be in conversation with him. And for that matter, anybody on his team, and Holly Bender is on his team. Holly, good to have you on this program. How are you today?
I'm great, Tavis. Thanks for having me.
It's my delight to have you on. I want to make the most of the few minutes that we have. Let me just ask you I'm going to stand back for a second and give you an opportunity to really just frame this conversation about coal plants properly. I say all the time, because I want to be transparent, and this ain't no secret. These are not easy topics. They're not sexy topics. Clearly, they are about issues of life and death. And clearly, if I didn't care about the climate, I wouldn't be spending all the time I'm spending this year as part of a series or advancing a series about climate conversations, particularly with regard to black people and poor people who always end up being the victims of these climate catastrophes, the victims of these maladies. And so, again, this isn't sexy, it isn't easy, and I celebrate you for just doing the hard work of bringing these updates to us. But tell me why, where, how, and about coal plants and why this should matter to everyday people. Take it away.
Yeah, well, thanks. I hope maybe after our conversation, folks will see it as fun and exciting and part of their life's work as well. So let me take a step back. Right now in the United States, the way that we make electricity is based on pretty outdated and deeply harmful technologies. Primarily, we use fossil fuels, coal, chief among them, and increasingly fracked or fossil methane gas to make electricity. And I believe that electricity is a public good. It's a right to have access to clean, affordable electricity. It's critical to our daily lives. And so the work of the Sierra Club and our Beyond Coal campaign, which is focused on retiring the remaining 151 coal plants left in the United States. We've defeated 379 already slated to retire. The purpose of this work is really focused on a couple of things. To start, I love hearing the climate justice framework that you've been talking about as this big investment of time. Love hearing about that as part of the celebration in Compton this weekend. Coal plants and gas power plants are the largest single source of climate pollution in the country. So just off the bat, it's a huge area to focus on if we care about climate change and climate justice. And that, of course, is everything from the direct pollution from these facilities to the ways in which changing climate puts all of our communities at risk, floods, heat, and changes in our communities that most people at this point have experienced in their daily lives. So we're focused there from a climate perspective. But for me personally, I actually came to this work because I care a lot about air pollution. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I was exposed to some pretty dangerous, toxic pollution that I now know as an adult was actually a petrochemical pollution. And for me, I care a lot about the air pollution impacts of coal plants and power plants in general. The most deadly air pollution out there comes from these facilities. So there's a lot of reasons to care about this this part of the work, and also a really hopeful story about what we replace it with.
Yep. So Holly, as always, has done her job quite brilliantly here. So if you're asking why is Tavis talking about spending 30 minutes talking about the closing of coal plants, you heard her. You get it, right? You get it, right? Because coal and these plants, these 151 plants that remain, they've knocked out a bunch of them. So Sierra Club is doing some great work. But these coal plants that remain are putting more pollution into the air than anything else in this country, these coal plants. And who, as I said earlier, would you guess are the victims of air pollution? There's a reason why 1 in 3 kids in Harlem, 1 in 3, has asthma. And the numbers aren't much better across the country. And so it's poor people who live near these plants. It's poor people that live near these plants. It's people of color who live near these plants. And so our air ends up being more polluted than the air that other people end up breathing. It's no wonder then that we end up getting the short end of the stick, end up at the top of all these lists of negatives when it comes to those who are impacted by air pollution. So if you've never thought about it in that way, that you close your ears, you close your eyes, you don't want to read the articles, you don't want to pay attention when they talk about coal plants, now you get why it matters to you, because those coal plants are dirtying the air that you breathe. I'm just getting started with Holly Bender. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
This is getting good.
Yeah, man.
Tavis Smiley, continues when we come forward. Helping to make you the most knowledgeable person in your circle of friends. This is Tavis Smiley.
This is Tavis Smiley in conversation with the Sierra Club's Chief Energy Officer, Holly Bender, who I'm pleased to have on this program. In about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by the Secretary of the Energy Department, Jennifer Granholm, as we talk about climate justice in this hour. But please, to commence this hour with Holly Bender of the Sierra Club. All right, Holly, let me jump right in. So give me a sense of where these plants that remain, 151 of these coal plants that are polluting our air oftentimes, again, inhaled by poor people and people of color. Give me a sense, broadly speaking, of the kinds of places. Give me a profile, if you will, of where these coal plants exist.
Yeah, it's a great question. And you started really talking about this, Tavis, before the break about, you know, who's really impacted by pollution from coal plants, but also polluting industry in general. And we know that it is Black and brown communities, low income communities. And so really our work is to focus in on identifying the most harmful plants and doing the work there in partnership with communities to ensure that they are replaced. So coal plants, there's 151 remaining across the country. They do operate in many, many states still, but there's a few places where they're increasingly concentrated. There's a significant number of coal plants remaining in Texas. Some of the most polluting plants are there in Texas, the highest emitters of mercury pollution, for example, a pollutant we know is deeply harmful to children and women of childbearing age. There's a significant number of plants in places like West Virginia, Kentucky, the largest coal plant remaining in the United States. The highest emissions is in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, North Carolina, Indiana. These plants really are located in a lot of different places, but increasingly some of the holdouts, the utility companies that insist on keeping their coal plants around, are located in the Southeast, in Texas, and in the Appalachia region.
Yep. You mentioned Mississippi and Indiana. I said, my skin kind of crawled. I'm born in Mississippi and raised in Indiana, so you got me on you got me on both counts, Mississippi and Indiana.
Yeah.
Yeah. I digress for now. Give me a sense now, and I'm not naive in asking this question, but give me a sense now of what the fight is like, what the fight entails to get these plants closed. We'll talk about the utilities in a moment, I'm sure you will, as part of the answer to this question and their recalcitrance. But take me inside the fight. Sierra Club's been quite successful, still 151 to go. Yeah, you made some progress. But what's the fight like when you're trying to close a coal plant and you're taking on a major utility?
Yeah, so if a coal plant was to take on and internalize, so to speak, the full cost of its pollution, taking all of that climate pollution, the mercury pollution, the particle pollution, and paying for the modern types of upgrades that it would be required to do to reduce those emissions. There's not a single plant in the United States that would continue to operate. They simply don't make sense if the operator is forced to take into account those costs. The only way that a coal plant operates today is because they aren't being required to do that. And so our job, in its most fundamental sense, is to force polluters to pay. We force polluters to pay by increasing the public health standards that protect people from dangerous air. We force polluters to pay by passing first ever standards on toxic water pollution that comes from these plants, and on and on and on, from the site of coal mining, the trains that deliver the coal, all the way to the waste that comes out of the process. There are pollution impacts along those ways. And so we have been working for decades to internalize those costs, forcing polluters to pay so that the public and people who live near these plants aren't paying in the form of health impacts, asthma attacks, heart attacks, premature deaths. Those are all impacts of these sort of uncontrolled plant emissions.
When you say make
and
them,
then the other...
I'm sorry, go ahead. Give me the other part. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the other part's really important too. The other part is, once the polluters have to pay, there is a hands-down case that clean electricity is much more affordable. We care a lot about making sure energy is affordable. So for every single one of your listeners trying to make a connection to, you know, why does this work matter to me? It matters because at the end of the day, clean energy is less expensive than these dirty fossil fuels. And so then we go into proceedings around the country where rates and bills are determined, and we say, don't let these polluters force you to pay for the cost of expensive, dirty fossil fuels. It's time to transition to clean electricity. Not only will that address air pollution and climate change, it will lower bills. And often it also brings additional investments into communities as we build out new clean electricity. Secretary Granholm may speak about that in the latter part of your show today. Billions of dollars are currently being deployed to communities around the country to invest in clean energy, so we can do exactly what I'm describing.
You may have just answered the question, but when you said earlier you make them pay, I assume you meant pay in dollars and cents, and those dollars and cents are used to do what exactly?
Right. So if you are a large emitter of certain types of pollution, paying for that pollution means cleaning it up. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the type of pollution. I'll use coal ash as an example. When you burn coal, there's this really toxic sludge that comes out of the power plant that historically has been dumped into pits, often right next to the power plant. Many of them don't have basic lining, so the dirty water just leaks into groundwater. People who live near these plants may have wells impacted by that dirty water. So a polluter pays approach is that the owner operator has to update its disposal practices. That costs money. That changes the economic calculation of continuing to burn fossil fuels in favor of an overall transition to cleaner electricity, which of course doesn't have this kind of waste.
Yep. I try not to ask two questions, but I'm going to ask two at one time and get out of your way, and you'll see why, because you can weave these two things together. I want to talk about the politics of coal. So for the audience who might not be as knowledgeable about this as you are, and I'm part of the audience, tell me about the politics of coal in this country, these coal plants. What are the politics on this? And I ask that because for as long as I can remember, in every presidential race, including the one that we're in right now, one of the candidates, at least, is going to be saying, we have to end America's dependency on fossil fuels. We hear it every 4 years, and yet we ain't done it yet. So I'm curious as to the politics of coal plants these days, who's saying what, who's doing what, and more to the point, the politics that you bump up against trying to do your work.
Yeah, so It's important to say that as we make this transition from fossil fuels to clean energy, we have to be deeply invested in partnership and collaboration with workers and communities that have been involved in the fossil fuel economy. That means thinking about workers from mining to transport to power plant workers, and really creating the conditions for the transition from fossil fuels to clean electricity to benefit workers and communities. The Inflation Reduction Act, which is a huge investment, billions of dollars in federal money to support this transition, takes that so seriously that it actually carves out special treatment for clean energy projects, for example, that are going to be supporting communities that have relied on fossil fuels. So one of the key elements of answering your question about what are the politics and how do we go about this, the politics of fossil fuels really revolve around imagining a future where we're not leaving workers and communities behind just because they have historically been part of a fossil fuel economy. Part of the vision and the politics and getting it right, and I do believe this current administration is working hard to get it right, is investing in those communities as part of the solutions in the future. So coal has, when I started this work, coal was about 50% of our energy mix in the United States. It's now down well below 20%. And so as coal has declined, we have been investing in clean electricity. And I strongly believe that the politics around clean energy and just energy in general are very oriented around what we're building next, around the vision we have for rooftop solar. We can increasingly see these investments in our community, on our neighbors' roofs, on solar arrays, on our schools. We can see the investments being made in updating housing so that it's more energy efficient. We can see the investments in wind turbines in our communities. And so the politics of energy are shifting pretty significantly in the U.S. And as they shift, it's really, really important that we take a thoughtful approach to ensuring that that shift benefits everybody in order to get the politics right.
I'm glad you talked about the fossil fuel economy, because obviously, if you do away with, if you eradicate the fossil fuel economy, there are workers, there are communities, there are everyday people who relied on this work. So the question becomes, what happens to them? You sort of already answered that question. The question I want to ask is not on the part of the workers or the communities, but on the part of the utilities and the people, the institutions, the organizations, the businesses who have made money off of this fossil fuel economy for decades. Here's my question. You mentioned earlier that clean energy is cheaper. Clearly it is. It's cheaper, but is it more profitable? Because it's all about the money for the utilities, all about the money for the shareholders. So it's great to know that clean energy is cheaper, but ultimately, is it more profitable?
So there's a couple ways to think about this question. Okay. One, you know, I guess the underlying question is, will the transition to clean electricity undercut a utility model such that they might push back against it, or it's a lesser option for
exactly.
them? And the answer to that is no. The answer to that is no. Utilities are among the largest investors in clean electricity. They stand to gain significantly as we transition, as they support this necessary build out of new clean energy, of transmission, of distribution lines in communities. Utilities really have a key role to play now and in the future as we make that transition. I mentioned the Inflation Reduction Act before. There are also programs that will help utilities make this transition by accelerating the way that they can sort of remove the fossil fuel incentives and really go for clean energy. But I want to say something else about your question, which is that increasingly, we as consumers need to see ourselves as part of the economic engine to make clean energy a reality. And so what do I mean by that? I have a smart thermostat in my home. I can have it turned up or down when energy prices or demand in my community is high so that we need less electricity overall. And so there are dozens and dozens of ways that we as you know, customers or consumers of electricity can also think of ourselves as participants in this economy and really shift the benefits. This shouldn't just be about shareholder profits and bottom lines for energy utility corporations, but how else can we bring the benefits, the economic benefits of clean energy into communities and individual households? And so I'm really excited about that bigger picture, democratizing energy, participating more in the actual development of energy systems. And I believe that both can be true, that utilities can see themselves in this future, and that individuals and communities can increasingly see themselves as participants too.
I close on this. I got about a minute to go. I close with this as the exit question. We're going to talk to Jennifer Granholm, the Secretary of Energy Department, in just a few minutes from now. And obviously, Jennifer Granholm is a white woman who's former governor of Michigan. It is the case at the moment that not only is there a black man, a brother running the Sierra Club, Ben Jealous, there's a black man running the EPA. His name is Michael Regan, and he's running the EPA. And that, I think, is significant. My question is whether or not all of these faces of color in these high places are having any impact, as you see it, on this fight to make our economy and our environment more adaptable to the clean energy you've been talking about.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I want to shout out Shalonda Baker, whose work on energy justice and the energy justice framework is work that I turn to consistently and constantly and have built into my team's work at the Sierra Club across our energy campaigns and thinking about really what I was just describing. How do we think about a more just energy system that benefits us all?
Right.
Shalonda Baker is at the Department of Energy, last time I checked, working with Secretary Granholm and really providing that kind of thought leadership for us on energy justice. So I absolutely, yes, the answer to your question is yes, and I can't wait to see what they keep doing.
Her name is Holly Bender. She is the Sierra Club's chief energy officer, and this is just one of many conversations that we're having this year as part of our continuing series on climate and the community, on climate and black folk, too often the victim of these climate catastrophes. Holly, we thank you for your work and your witness. Give my best to Ben Jealous. Good to have you on this program.
Will do. Thank you.
When we come forward in our remaining moments of this program today, a conversation with the Secretary of the Energy Department, Jennifer Granholm, on Tavis Smiley.